Welcome back to the MCP. My name is Rick Alexander. If you guys are getting a lot out of this show, of course, it's a new channel. And in order to climb the ranks and to get the message out there to more and more people, I do need positive reviews on iTunes. It's a system that I don't love. I don't even like being in a position to ask for these reviews. But if you are getting something out of this show, it would really mean the world to me if you could go on and just give us a 5-star review. And of course, share the show with anybody that you think might like it. Today, I want to talk about finding your place in a chaotic world. That's something that I talk about a lot, and there's many different angles and there's many different ways to think about it. Today, I just want to give a bit of a what I would consider to be a broad overview on some things to think about when it comes to trying to find your place, because it is by no means a straightforward process in the world today. And so hopefully this will give you some things to think about, because finding your place in the world can be tough. You've got to sift through your own motivations and figure out which ones are genuine and which ones are simply driven by comparison and the need to be who you think that you need to be. You have to figure out where the grass is greener and where are you the most happy. Yet, you have to balance that with finding the right amount of striving so that your life takes on a sense of meaning. You know, without the striving, you can begin to feel stuck rather quickly. And without meaning, you'll fall apart rather quickly. Yet, when we strive for something that gives us meaning, we often have to let go of what is currently making us happy or comfortable. This is why in The Lion King, Simba eventually did have to leave the good life of Hakuna Matata and return to seize the kingdom and face the thing that originally drove him out. Destiny often requires that we face our fears in that way. If he did not, he would have traded happiness now for meaning ultimately, and over time would grow to resent what originally made him happy. Lots of us know that feeling. We hold on to where we are because we love it so much, even though we know it, maybe it's time to go, or maybe we hold on because it was serving us at one point. What happens if spirit or your soul or something deep within you is causing you to look around and ask what else might be true, or it's stirring you to move? Oftentimes, if you ignore that call, you'll begin to resent what actually made you happy at one time. There are seasons for everything in life. Seasons to prepare, seasons to enjoy, seasons to reap, and seasons to sow. When we get particularly attached to any one season, we can often create our own discontent as the seasons pass, and we aren't willing to let it go and embrace what's next. I know that I personally grow a bit guilty of wanting to keep gaining the rewards of life, when in fact, my current goals are actually just asking me to do the work. Applause waits on success, but it's rather easy to grow accustomed to the applause and begin to expect it, when in fact, the season has changed and it hasn't yet been earned. At the same time, even if we are putting the right amount of preparation into our work, as the seasons pass, we also run the risk of losing our identity. This often happens when we know our job or situation is no longer making us happy. But we've spent so much time putting our effort into the job, we no longer clearly see where it ends and we begin. Our identity feels safe in what we do, especially if we've gotten good at it or have done it for so long it now feels like what everyone knows us by. The same thing happens in relationships. We felt a stirring to leave for a while, and yet, who would we be without being John's wife or Susan's husband or whatever? You see where I'm going with this. We're also always moving in and out of these scenarios, leaving small parts of ourselves to fight a battle that we haven't yet gotten our mind around, and each and every time we do, we lose a part of ourselves that could be contending with the present and making it better. Sometimes we leave so much of ourselves in the past that we forget altogether that our life is happening now, and any energy that is fighting an old battle could actually just be applied to making the here and now the best it could possibly be. We do the exact same thing with unknown elements of the future. We mortgage our happiness now and trust in some external force in the future, like a job well done, to bring it back to us. And lastly, we have the unique problem of information overload. The world in which our biology evolved and adapted to is not the world that we find ourselves in now. Some estimates say we have up to 11,000 advertisements per day shoved into our faces. This puts our processing system on overload as we wonder if every single right opportunity is actually the right opportunity for us. See, everyone has a method, or a scheme, or some idea about how to make our lives better. Very few professed experts even agree on most issues. Just start trying to find the best diet, exercise, or lifestyle design, business tactics, and more. Politicians often can't agree on what the real problems are, so it's unlikely that we'll get many answers out of them. Yet, it's another place we're supposed to pick a side of the line while overlooking nuance. We also get torn in our roles. We want to make our parents and family happy. After all, they put so much money and time into us and our education. How could we not make them a priority? Yet, often their ideas about what success should look like were formed in a world that we no longer live in. Making money as an artist isn't nearly as difficult as it used to be. So what if we end up prioritizing their way of navigating the world, and in the process, it makes ours miserable? I'm not even going to get into religion because, ironically, God only knows how the hell we'll ever come to an agreement over that. The point is, as humans, we're at the intersection of everything at all times, and we feel the pressure coming from all the polarities that surround us. As I've said before, we're always standing between heaven and hell, right and wrong, right and left, meaning and apathy, happiness and sadness. And when everyone has an option about how you should proceed, we aren't helped out, we're more confused. I do believe this information overload causes lots of dissonance within our lives, because what's worse than going the wrong direction is going no direction at all. For example, if you were to commit to a workout plan that was wrong for you, you'd still be healthier than if you sat on the couch. So what I'd like to do is offer you some of the solution that I found to the madness. This isn't to say that I don't fall into confusion and overwhelm. That's a burden of our finite processing systems in an infinite world. So on some level, as long as we are in the world, that will be a constant problem that knocks at our door. But the confusion can be relieved. There are other ways to go about it. We also have the problem of contending with validation. See, our entire lives we've been taught to prioritize validation. We were applauded when we learned to walk or talk or wipe our ass, and so we've evolved ourselves to respond positively to it. But what happens when we're positively validated for something that is creating a negative experience, like in school, constantly? You might not want to do a project or write a paper or care about a topic, yet you learn to work hard at it anyway. If you got a decent grade, the world just taught you something about how to proceed in life. It taught you to prioritize what you don't care about and even congratulated you on it. Maybe this works out because there are times when you do have to do the not so fun work. Yet, maybe you've grown so good at it, it's where you've built the foundation of your life, and now any kind of happiness eludes you completely. The first way to begin cutting through overwhelm and advice that isn't serving you is to recognize the actual game that we're playing. See, if you don't understand the game, you don't know the rules. And if you don't know the rules, you aren't going to be successful within the game. Understanding the game that we call life can be even more difficult because our own processing system creates what's called a cognitive bias, so that regardless of where we are, we can tell ourselves we're doing much better than we thought, or that we're on the right track when we aren't, and so forth. So first, we must stop lying to ourselves. It cannot go on if we're going to change anything at all. We must lay the foundation correctly, or navigating on it will continuously put us in ruin. Be real with yourself about the fact that you're gonna die, because you are. There are only so many more tomorrows. Not only that, but everything you create will go away. You are in effect building sandcastles that the tides of time are going to eventually wash away. Even Trump, who puts his name on everything, will be forgotten in a few thousand years at most. We don't even know who built the Egyptian pyramids or what they were really used for, and that's the most soundly constructed building on Earth. So then, you must ask yourself, if we are in fact building sandcastles that will be eroded, then what's the point? Why do anything at all? I would argue that perhaps it's not about what you build, but who you become in the process. Maybe there's more to you than you think. Maybe what you take with you from this life is who you can become through what you do. This is the first step in a better understanding of how to navigate life, because if you cling to what you do, you can only find disappointment with its inevitable erosion. Yet you see that you are always going on in some form or another. You are always taking the character you create with you from one build to the next. When this is your outlook, obstacles become important, since that's where you form your character. Endings become important, because it's where you create space for something new and better to exist. Borders and limits become important because they create the thing that you measure yourself against and see where you can go beyond. Despair becomes important because it's where you've learned the thing that you can turn into a gift to help others in their own journey. The second thing that might help you navigate this maze we call life is having the courage to live according to your own constitution and the awareness to be honest with yourself with the results. The reason you know what's best for you over every other thing or person in this world is because you are the one who must look at it all and decide whether or not you're satisfied with it. You're the one who has been crafted by your own unique experiences, and as such, you see parts of the world in a way that only you can. You're the one who remembers where you didn't stand up for what you knew was right. You're the one who feels called to aspects of life that others don't see for you. You're the one who diminishes part of your soul that could actually be expanded should it find an authentic outlet somewhere in the world. Who knows who you could help if you were to take the leap toward authenticity? Who knows who is missing out by not getting to hear your perspective? All of the things that stand in the way, whether it be imposter syndrome or confusion, won't matter in the end if we know that there was a path for us and we chose not to walk it. We won't ever get to meet the people whose lives are made worse by not hearing our message, but we'll know somewhere deep within ourselves that all of the things we've prioritized were only half-hearted replicas of the world we could have had. Have you ever seen what becomes of people when they don't have the courage to walk their own path or prioritize their own dreams? They tend to discourage you from it. They tend to validate you for work you don't care about. Not because they're malicious, but because it is the world they've grown to know, and people tend to propagate what they know when they haven't taken the time to clarify the game that they're actually playing. Maybe it'd be best if you just sifted through the endless information and only chose to adopt what you felt was helpful for you and you left the rest. Of course, this would require an amount of personal responsibility, as you have to be honest with what works for you and what doesn't. You have to be clear when the results are what you want and have the courage to turn around and begin again when they're not. It requires tact as you learn your own systems for evaluating success. But when dogmatic people say you must take all of their message or none, what they are missing in their point of view is that we, as dynamic and ever-evolving creatures, are rarely at anyone else's point, and so we must take the time to form our own view. People can guide us to the edge, but they can't make the jump with us. You won't be formally invited. It'll happen in the soul, where you feel the desire for things to be better or different. It will happen at the level of courage, when you decide that a life that is not your own simply won't be the view that you are content to look back on when it's over and the sandcastle is about to be washed away. That's helped me anyway. I love you guys. I hope you have an amazing Monday. We'll talk later on Morning Coffee.